Welcome to In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. We know that air pollution in Utah is a problem. Recently, in fact, the American Lung Association listed Salt Lake City, Orem, and Provo as having, during certain times of the year, some of the worst air quality in the nation. The sources of that pollution include people driving around in their cars, trucks, and semis, industrial emissions, oil refineries located near to population centers, and even dust storms from the exposed lake bed of a drying Great Salt Lake. And of course, it doesn't help that many of us here in northern Utah live in bowl-shaped valleys that can, when the conditions are right, trap pollutants in a soupy smog of bad air we call the inversion. Air pollution impacts our health and our economy. But let's be honest, for some of us, the concern over that pollution is abstract. We assume that there will be some eventual effect on our well-being, the way there might be if we have too much fat or sugar in our diets over a long period of time. Yeah, it's bad, but maybe we think we've got the luxury of ignoring it and hoping that the weather changes. We'll pray for rain or a winter snowstorm to clear out the gunk so that we can breathe easy again, even if some damage to our health has maybe already been done. Among the problems with that attitude are that it might make it more difficult for us to change our behaviors to help address the problem, and that it doesn't take into account people for whom air pollution can have far more drastic and immediate consequences. Research carried out in 2015 by the Intermountain Medical Center Heart Institute found an increase in the risk of serious heart attacks for people with heart disease on days when air quality reaches just the yellow level or moderate range due to particulate pollution. When people with heart disease breathe polluted air, their artery walls become inflamed, and the plaque they have there can become unstable, blocking the artery. And that means air pollution can kill the day it happens. And if your immediate thought on hearing that was, well, don't get heart disease, or those people aren't exercising enough, you should know that the majority of people who have heart disease don't know that they have it. And leaving aside the privilege of being able to exercise and eat right, a lot of heart disease is simply genetic. It is, after all, the leading cause of death in the United States. Other groups at risk on days with diminished air quality include the elderly, young children, and people with lung disease like asthma, emphysema, or COPD. Studies have also shown that air pollution is associated with an elevated risk for miscarriage, and schools in Utah report more students calling in sick when the air is bad. Recently, though, researchers at the Huntsman Cancer Institute and the University of Utah found that there was yet another group at risk of immediate and adverse effects from air pollution: young survivors of cancer. Here's Dr. Judy Oh, the lead author on the new study, looking at the risks air pollution poses for young survivors of cancer.
Many survivors have severe chronic problems with their lungs due to the effects of treatment and also the cancer. These problems are so severe that respiratory issues are leading non-cancer cause of death among survivors of childhood cancers. We found that air pollution adversely affects the lung health of this population. So air pollution is a societal problem, but its impact on cancer survivors' health has never before been studied. We found that air pollution increases survivors' risk for respiratory problems, severe enough to result in hospitalization even at pollution levels considered safe for sensitive groups. Survivors treated with chemotherapy had the highest risk for hospitalization due to air pollution, which was much higher than the general Utah public. We also found that air pollution was related to respiratory infections in survivors. This finding is especially important because of air pollution's ability to suppress the immune system. Some survivors do not recover full immune function, leaving them prone to infections. Our study focused on children, adolescents, and young adults who survived cancer. Although all groups were at risk for respiratory problems due to air pollution, we found that survivors diagnosed at the youngest ages, as young as 3 years old, were the most vulnerable to air pollution after treatment.
What does that vulnerability for young cancer survivors look like?
In our research, we found that the most predominant cause of the hospitalizations and the emergency department visits were respiratory infections. These are things like the flu, pneumonia, and bronchitis. And so we know that air pollution has the ability to suppress the immune system, meaning that it lowers your body's ability to defend itself against diseases, right? And so because cancer survivors may already have immunosuppression due to the lingering effects of treatment, this sensitivity coupled with exposure to air pollution after treatment may work together to increase their risk for respiratory infections.
Dr. Oh says this new information should be something policymakers and public health officials consider as they think about strategies for dealing with air pollution and its effects.
I think, at least with environmental regulations in the past, most people think about protecting the general public. But what we're increasingly finding is that there are sensitive groups that need further protection. And if you protect those that are most sensitive, you by default then protect everyone in the entire population. And so I think that what policymakers should take from this is that, you know, Utah has a growing population of cancer survivors. Many of them are probably the policymakers' friends and family. And if we want to make sure that we are doing our due diligence in preventing illness in this group, that we should consider policies that perhaps address the problem of air pollution here in the state.
Elizabeth Liebrecht is the mother of a young adult who is a cancer survivor. She says that staying abreast of research for survivors is something that she and her family make a point of doing because it can make an impact in her daughter's quality of life.
Well, my daughter Miranda was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma when she was 21, and our family has been very fortunate, and that was our very first close exposure to cancer. So it's been a crash course in learning all things cancer and chemo, and we're very fortunate in that now we're learning all things survivorship, and we pay close attention to the latest research and projects, especially that come out of Huntsman and the University of Utah, for their guidance. And, you know, one of the things that we have noticed is when a young adult or a child survives cancer, they get a new normal. And you're very lucky with all of the research and has increased survivorship rates, but that you do get a new normal, but you have a lot to learn to adjust to that. And, you know, living in a place where there is pollution, which is a lot of places in this country, a lot of places in the world, you do have to become aware of that and how that can affect the survivor. There's typically a lot of side effects or a lot of damage. The body has done its very best to survive cancer, and it has to adjust to things, and it does it differently. So, you know, paying attention to things like these studies that talk about air quality and trying to make changes without altering your life completely, but trying to make those small changes to do the best to give her the ability to still, you know, live her life and do what she wants, but to do pay attention to try to protect her health is really important.
Liebrecht says her daughter is sensitive to increases in air pollution, but has been fortunate not to have been hospitalized from her respiratory problems.
She has been very fortunate, and she has not had an emergency room visit or been hospitalized with a respiratory illness. She has had to be treated just by a regular physician, but we notice a lot. There's a lot of coughing with her, and, you know, one of her side effects from her chemotherapy is she did have two pulmonary embolisms, so she does have some lung damage, which I think is probably what makes her particular situation more susceptible to the poor air quality or to whatever it is that's causing, you know, a persistent cough or, sensitivity to what is going on around her.
Here on KCPW, we provide air quality updates weekday mornings. Regularly, I advise listeners what the air quality index is predicted to be for the day and what the recommendations are from the Utah Department of Environmental Quality. Depending on the day, I might tell people in sensitive groups, like those with heart or lung disease, to avoid exercising outdoors. Elizabeth Liebrecht says that the new study means she'll be paying closer attention to those reports.
You know, the study just came out, and it's interesting because it's things you think you're aware of everything as a parent of a cancer survivor, and all of a sudden you see it and you go, oh, wait, whoa. I'm somebody who does pay attention to the air quality alerts because I, have children and myself living in this valley, but I can tell you they talk about, you know, children with asthma. I can tell you they talk about people with heart conditions. And, you know, I did not put two and two together until this research project came out. I think that this research should guide, the public officials in notifying, but I also think you can target populations, especially through survivorship plans for, you know, coming from Huntsman or other oncologists.
But Liebrecht says this isn't just about survivors, even though they are at greater risk. How well we do protecting cancer survivors will be an indicator of how seriously we take this problem, a problem that impacts the entire community.
You know, all of this research, I think, is really, really important. And I think that, you know, any research that can benefit this population obviously has a special place in my heart. And but I also think it's really important that it starts a larger conversation, a larger air quality conversation. And it isn't just for, you know, cancer survivors. It's for everybody. And I think that because a cancer survivor has gone through chemo or has damage or side effects or maybe a lower immune system, I think they show the effects of the environment sooner or more dramatically than perhaps the rest of us. But I do think it is an important part of the larger conversation that, you know, let's focus on these individual populations and let's get them the warnings or the help or the care that they need. But then, you know, I do think it's good that it is driving a much larger conversation that is important for everybody.
The list of people for whom air pollution could represent an immediate danger is likely to keep growing. Having found an increased likelihood of hospitalization from respiratory problems for young cancer survivors, the researchers from the University of Utah and Huntsman Cancer Institute say they plan to examine the data on hospitalizations for adult survivors to see what it says about the effects of air pollution on that population. Earlier in the show, we heard Dr. Judy Oh talk about providing data with the hope that public health officials and policymakers could make informed decisions. This year at Utah's legislature, air quality appropriations amounted to just under $30 million. That's a lot of money. More, in fact, than any previous air quality allocations. But it was less than the $100 million Governor Gary Herbert had challenged the legislature to spend on clean air initiatives. Yesterday afternoon at a Beans and Brews coffee shop, I sat down with one of the policymakers involved in a variety of clean air initiatives in Utah to hear about what lawmakers accomplished at this past legislative session on the air quality front.
Patrice Arendt, House District 36, which is the D Mill Creek. I am the founder and co-chair of the Bipartisan Clean Air Caucus. Clean Air Caucus is open to all legislators and the public, and we learn about different air quality issues. We have presentations from advocates, from the Division of Air Quality, from various groups, because we want to learn about what we can do to improve our air quality. We've never had anything even close to over $29 million for air quality. One year we had maybe seven, and I have to go back and look for sure, but that was when we needed a building to do some analysis. Normally we don't get, and this is new money. This is $29.2 million in new money. There are appropriations, and there are also 15 or 16 bills that passed too. So it's not just about appropriations. We put a lot of money into a voluntary program, which we've had for years, to reduce wood smoke, to convert those wood fireplaces to cleaner burning fuel. And that makes a big difference. On inversion days, sometimes up to 15% of the pollution can come from wood stoves. Another thing we did is we vastly increased the number of electric vehicle charging stations we're going to have. A lot of people don't buy electric vehicles because of what they call range anxiety. They're worried, where are they going to be able to charge it? And we're going to have charging stations at many state facilities, which are open to the public, and at many private facilities. One of the things we have accomplished this session is creating a teleworking program for our state employees, so they're not going to be on the road during those really bad days, and some of them are actually going to be able to move their jobs to rural Utah. So that's going to be a big benefit, and it's going to be a model for some of the businesses that aren't doing that yet. We had programs in terms of weatherization. We have an air quality and climate research study that's going to be done by the Kim Gardner Center with some matching funds that Speaker Wilson requested. We had anti-idling laws that had been passed by many municipalities from Logan all the way down to Sandy, but the problem is they were almost unenforceable. Now they're going to be able to enforce them, and because of that, I can tell you as recently as yesterday, I've talked to mayors that said, now we're going to pass them. the bill reduces the number of warnings they have to give them, and that was the problem before. Because if you had to give three warnings first, you know, it was just very difficult, and there's no database of warnings. So you could have three warnings in Logan, and three warnings in Sandy, and three warnings in Park City. And so this makes it enforceable. And we need to understand, idling's not good for anyone's vehicle. If you talk to the manufacturers, they'll tell you the best way to warm up a car is to drive it. If you're going to stop your car for 10 seconds, you should turn it off. And instead of putting pollution into the air. And I can't tell you how many times I was walking by a school at 60 degrees, and people are idling. It's important to discourage idling because it's one of the worst things we can do for our airshed.
Another initiative that passed at this year's session aims to get people out of their cars by making mass transit free to ride when an inversion is predicted. The bill, by Democratic Representative Joel Briscoe, sets aside $500,000 to pay for 7 free fare days, days when you can get on tracks or buses for free. Clean Air Caucus founder Representative Patrice Arendt says the passage of that bill is an opportunity to promote mass transit and to hopefully shrink the number of polluting vehicles on the road.
It's a pilot program, and they're still working out the details, but the idea is to get people on mass transit. And what we know from all of the past history is once they've tried it, they're more likely to use it. So we not only want them to try it, but we want to make sure they're getting on it on those days that we need to have fewer cars on the road.
And this one's interesting in that it's sort of working with Department of Environmental Quality, I think, to look at when you're having an inversion coming up and then dealing with it that way. Is that a sort of...
Well, yes, and you can predict those. We know when we're going into an inversion period. So it's very helpful, and we should be able to work that out with our mass transit. Clearly, there's a lot more we need to do. There's not one silver bullet. One of the most important things we will be doing is getting the Tier 3 fuel here because it's so much cleaner. A Tier 3 car and Tier 3 fuel together take about 80% of the pollutants off the road per car. Now, even with a Tier 2 car, it's taking a lot of the pollution off the road from the cars that are on the road. So, you know...
Do you know the time frame on that, on how soon we get Tier 3 fuels generally here?
3 of the 5 refineries have committed to doing it, and I think we will see Tier 3 fuel starting within the year. So this is good, this is important, but it's only one of the things we need to be doing. There's so much that we can do, and we always have to be vigilant to keep looking. And we're learning new things all the time. I mean, that's the point of the research, is to make sure that we're using our dollars very wisely. I mean, when we look at how we spent the money last session, a lot of times we're just looking at how much is it going to cost to take this many tons of pollutants out of the air. So it's bang per buck. We don't want to just do things that aren't going to be effective with the taxpayer dollars.
If you look at other cities around the globe who have had air pollution problems, I'm thinking about places like Beijing where they have taken really drastic actions on limiting who can drive when. Essentially, you know, if you have this on your license plate, then you can't drive on odd days and even days. We're predicted to grow, double in size in the next little while, more drivers, more pollution. I don't know. Are we going to have to, like, take drastic actions along those lines, Representative Arendt?
I hope there are things we can do short of that. I don't know how effective that would be in Utah. I know that it would be a lot of pushback. I doubt that would pass the legislature. But we have to look at all of the alternatives. This is an important health care issue. It's an important economic development issue. And it's not just during inversions and when you live in a valley. We're talking about ozone, and we're talking about year-round. Now, there are some things we can't control. I don't know how to solve the wildfire problem completely. I can't, and particularly with climate change. So we do have issues that that are sometimes outside of our control. A fire in California impacts the air quality in Utah.
Can you talk, I guess, generally about how economic development plays into this, Representative Arendt?
Yes, there are employees that will not come to Utah because of the poor air quality. There are businesses that won't come to Utah because of the poor air quality. If you look at Envision Utah's study, the number one reason people leave Utah is poor air quality. So the pollution is having an impact. It has an impact in other strange ways. If there's a big story in it, like the New York Times, about how bad the air is in Utah, businesses in rural parts of the state, and I'll give you an example, Boulder, Utah, cleanest air you've ever seen, but people will call and say, I'm not sure it's safe to come to Utah. Do you think maybe I need to cancel this reservation or change it? They're worried because they don't realize that it's not the whole state.
And that's an impact on tourism, which is a big part of it.
Impact on tourism, impact on business development. Certainly, this is an important issue. And that's why some of the rural legislators who represent areas that don't have any pollution are very involved in this issue.
What about things that you've passed in years past that have now borne fruit that you're seeing the results of to some extent? What are you proud of from years past?
Yeah. It's a difficult question because since I founded the caucus in 2013, we have passed more clean air legislation than in the history of our state. course, as we've talked about, there's still a lot more to do. And it's been from incentives to get Tier 3 fuel, penalties for those that are blowing black smoke, particularly intentionally, out of the back of their vehicles. We've done a lot in terms of trying to increase renewable energy. We have been all over the place. You know, and some of it's penalties and some of it's making sure we're monitoring, watching everybody much more closely than we have in the past, whether that's industry or individuals. We're also trying to improve our buildings. Buildings are very polluting. And the difference in just the water heater you purchased, now we are phasing out low NOx water heaters for ultra low NOx. And they those low NOx water heaters pollute a lot. We have provided funding for research so we can figure out what's going on, particularly recently out in Uinta Basin, trying to make sure that we carefully monitor some of the pollution there. And we've got some incredible equipment out there we've been able to pay for to do that.
Is there an air quality initiative in the state that you have wanted to see passed but just haven't been able to get passed? You said no silver bullet, but are there sticking points where more could be done and they're not being done from a legislative standpoint?
There is always more that can be done, whether it's trying to get the freight switchers that are very polluting replaced. I'd like to see front runner be cleaner. I'd like to see some of the old, dirty, polluting vehicles off the road. We did a lot this year to get some of those state vehicles off the road, but what about for private citizens? You can't just give them what their vehicle is worth because they can't afford to go buy a new vehicle for that price. Representative Stenquist had a bill along those lines, and that's something I'd like to see done. But there is, again, there's no silver bullet. There's a lot of different things we're working on and continuing to work. And I hope that the public participates, gives us ideas, and joins us at the Clean Air Caucus. We meet every Tuesday night before our big interim meetings, which are, you know, once a month. And we'd love to have more public input. We have a pretty full audience, though, I will say.
Where do they find you?
They can find me at my state email address, which is probably the easiest. It's parent@le.utah.gov. The Clean Air Caucus meets in the copper room of the Senate building at 6:30 on May 14th, and that's going to be a really interesting meeting. We're going to go through Air Quality 101. We're going to talk about what happened during the last session, the good and things that we didn't get passed. We're going to get a presentation from UCARE. It's going to be a good meeting, and we even provide free pizza for the public.
Again, that was Mill Creek Democratic Representative Patrice Arendt, co-chair of the Clean Air Caucus at the Utah State Legislature. What, if anything, are you doing on a personal level to combat a problem that impacts public health? What do you think the state isn't doing that it should be doing to address air pollution? Are you someone who remembers the days of coal-burning furnaces in Salt Lake City and would like to tell us how much worse it used to be? Contribute your thoughts by calling our comments line here at KCPW and leaving a message. That number is 801-359-5279, extension 200. Leave us a message and we might feature your comments in a future show. That does it for this edition of In the Hive. Thanks very much to Andrew Shaw, who composed our theme music, and as always to the team here at KCPW for their support. I'm Roger McDonough, and I appreciate your joining me today. Both Sides of the Aisle is coming up next.